Brand new week, you and I together, Monday, August 14th, 2023, right here on Connecticut Today. We welcomed State Senate Republican Leader Kevin Kelly of Stratford. He wanted to talk about ways to make the voting process smoother for all state residents. I also had a few thoughts on comparisons between the Watergate scandal during the Richard Nixon years and the current Donald Trump controversies. We often hear of at least accusations, although we never really get people saying it in front of cameras with legal representation about how hard it is to vote in Connecticut or how they were virtually prevented from voting here. And I've always said, well, you know, where is the hard evidence? What are the stories? What are the backstories? What is the basis of these accusations? And, you know, we really never hear that. One thing we do hear about, though, is excessive lines and long lines, which, again, with an effort by our lawmakers statewide and locally, we can seem to fix that. But is the will there to actually do that? Or are there certain narratives that some people just want to have out there? State Senate Republican Leader Kevin Kelly of Stratford joins us right now. And Kevin addressed that, at least one aspect of that, in a weekend op-ed in the Hartford Current. Hey, Kevin, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
I'm pretty good. Yourself, Paul?
Very well, Kevin. Thank you. I read with interest and really with delight your op-ed. One of the things you brought up, Kevin, is kind of this meme or this drone that's out there that lines are so long and it's, you know, so difficult to vote. And here we go again with voter disenfranchisement. But, you know, Kevin, as you said in that op-ed, to me and to a lot of folks, it's just not the case. And even if it is the case, even if there is some inconvenience, you know, there seems to be a snail's pace effort here, Kevin, to address that.
Unfortunately, you're correct. And, you know, it also goes against the narrative that the majority likes to talk about as to, you know, threats to democracy. Well, I think there's no bigger threat to democracy than creating a system that disenfranchises people who want to get out and vote. And while we had this constitutional amendment last year that, you know, families across Connecticut voted in favor of, you know, quite large, fact of the matter was they didn't define it. So this session, we had to define that issue in Hartford. And we thought it would be done in a collaborative manner. In other words, get all perspectives at the table and all work together for the betterment of the state. Because it doesn't matter whether you're Republican or Democrat, you're going to play by these rules in the election. And there's nothing more important in our elections than people trusting the outcome and having faith that the will of the people was heard. Well, the majority Democrats believe that they're the only ones that have the corner on ideas and capability to run elections. And so they created a system that does not take into consideration certain things that are necessary in order to avoid those long lines and voter disenfranchisement. And this is things that have been documented by the UPI, the New York Times, and even the Brennan Center for Justice at the New York University of New York, that are not necessarily, I'm going to call your conservative think tanks, but more or less liberal in nature. And one of the things they said was, let's make sure the wait time is 30 minutes or less.
Okay.
And if you have wait times of 30 minutes or less, that tends to increase voter turnout and input. We put an amendment forward to give the majority an opportunity to do just that, mandate that lines don't last more than 30 minutes, and it was categorically rejected. Further, what those same reports showed was that poorer communities, communities that couldn't afford the technology or couldn't afford the proper personnel, that they also tended to have lower voter turnout because long lines, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And again, in this case, where it was demonstrated that it was a fiscal note, it's going to cost our communities more money to do longer polls and longer polling days, that cost on the municipality is going to be significant. And again, we said, if the state's going to mandate this, then the state should pay for it so that all communities could afford the same opportunity to all their voters. Unfortunately, the majority said no to that. So what's going to happen is our poorer communities that aren't going to be able to afford multiple polling locations on these early voting days are not going to have that same ability that communities of means could to have more than one polling location.
As we continue about the politics, unfortunately, this should be a bipartisan thing. The politics of voting access simply boil down to the hours you can vote, where you can vote, making it easy as possible. An op-ed this past weekend, check it out, the Hartford Current from State Senate Republican leader Kevin Kelly of Stratford. Kevin, I've never understood, and maybe I'm missing something you can tell me. Kevin, it's not rocket science. If year after year, either Democrats or Republicans say, hey, these lines are too long, open another polling place. Kevin, what am I missing here? We landed on the moon in 1969. Can we not figure out, hey, maybe that school or that firehouse should be another polling place? What am I missing?
You're not missing anything, Paul, and quite frankly, this is just common sense. Unfortunately, the majority doesn't see it that way. And this is very chilling in the sense that, you know, more polling locations would create greater voter access, greater voter turnout, shorter wait times. And the fact is, right now, at least last budget, we were actually in a position where the state budget was awash in money. We had a historic surplus. So if there was ever a time that the state could act and give communities the resources that they need, well, that was the time. That's why we were putting it forward, saying, hey, let's have shorter lines. Let's put resources in all polling locations, so that the playing field in every single town and city, poor and rich alike, have all the same access to the voting rights. To me, that's making sure that our democracy works for everyone. Unfortunately, it didn't resonate with the majority. And they'll be out there with their narrative talking about, you know, threats to democracy. But here you are putting it point blank. Every single Democrat voted against giving every community the capability to give voter access equally above the board to all people. And this is just one of you'll see several in the next weeks where we'll show that Democrats are not necessarily making this government fair or equitable to all.
Kevin, I wanted to touch on at least one more thing here before we have to wrap it up. A few days ago, I think a week or week and a half ago, you had a guy who we come to find out through some very good reporting in the news outlets in the state, a guy out who is a suspect now in a shooting case. He was out on something like almost $1 million in bonds, $800,000 in bonds on separate cases here. And I know you and a bunch of legislators kind of raised the red flag and have said, you know, how is this possible when you get to a point where obviously somebody is a threat to society? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, first and foremost, it is so disheartening to see that this is actually happening and that the loss of life is almost becoming a story that happens with such frequency and reoccurs on a daily basis, that our communities are becoming numb to this. This conduct, these events were totally avoidable, and that's why it's unacceptable to allow it to persist. You have an individual, as you say, Paul, that came in contact with the Connecticut criminal justice system, has all these bonds up against them, but yet still was able to post bond, got out, and engaged in conduct with an ankle bracelet on. So there was actually a monitoring system that should have known his comings and going, and somebody at the probation department didn't follow through for some reason, was not supervising what was happening. So there's a failure on that part, but there's also a failure in the legislature itself to the point where you now had on a Friday afternoon in bright sunlight in the shadow of the state capitol, you have a shootout on 84.
Yeah, I saw. Oh, my
God.
Hear
the, you'll hear the majority tell you that Connecticut is safer than Chicago or Detroit or Washington. But you know what? We don't live in those communities. We live in Connecticut. We love Connecticut for a reason, because this is a beautiful state. The people here are wonderful. And we want the Connecticut that we used to know about, the Connecticut from 2 and 4, 8 years ago, where it wasn't as violent, wasn't as dangerous, to the point now that people are afraid to go to the store to pump their gas with their car with gas. I mean, you saw the carjackings that happened in Norwalk. Another individual with an ankle bracelet was able to do that and then shot the operators. I mean, this is just unacceptable. And what we really need is a response from our legislature to make sure that we're doing right by the people of Connecticut, making sure their neighborhoods are safe. And that, I think that all starts with cracking down on a lax and permissive criminal justice system.
All right, Kevin, thank you. Folks, check out his op-ed from this past weekend's Hartford Current regarding ways to maybe at minimum cut down the lines and make voting a little easier in our upcoming municipal primaries and elections. Kevin, thank you. We'll be in touch. Thanks.
You bet. Take care.
All right. Thanks. Check out the op-ed, folks. So while I had the afternoons and early evenings off last week, I had kind of an altered schedule, but I was still staying to my schedule of trying to take a nice, stress-reducing, relaxing walk every day, Monday through Friday, saying, hey, I'm not on now. I'm not going to listen to any radio. Not that I don't love radio. It's what I've been doing for almost 40 years. But we did our radio for the day, I said, so let me take my walk. Let me breathe in the clean afternoon air. Let me wave to the folks in my town. Let me convince the police officers that I'm not a wayward person walking away from a nursing home. I'm actually okay. So, while I'm walking, I like to enjoy a little music, an audio book every so often, and maybe some old television specials. And I said to myself, self, you know, likely if he doesn't take a plea deal, that we're going to have this Donald Trump court hearing, this court case, you know, involving the January 6th thing. Let me go back to a previous time. Let me rewind the tape. Remember tape? Yes. Let me rewind the tape and go back 51 years. How about we do that? I said, let's go. If we're going to go back, let's go back 51 years previously. And let's start out actually 51 years back. And then we'll boot it up to about... we'll boot that sucker up to about, 49 years. Let's go back to 1972, shall we? And I pulled up a couple of TV specials, one from PBS, one from ABC. This is pre-Fox, pre-MSNBC, pre-CNN, pre-C-SPAN. And those of you who follow me on social media, you saw links to the two specials that I watched, because I wanted to kind of get a refresher, not so much of the facts of the case, but I wanted to take a look at how the country reacted during Watergate. And for those of you who are about my age, late 50s, certainly into early and mid 60s as we approach there, that was a big, I mean, that was some big doings. And a lot of people, younger folk in their 30s and 40s who are kind of immersed in all this now, they have kind of, I guess, a cursory sort of grip as to what happened there. Yeah, Nixon screwed up and he had to resign or he would have gotten impeached. And that, yeah, that's basically, I just gave you the real tight Cliff Notes version of that. But that's it. And, you know, there came to be people in pop culture like John Dean and G. Gordon Liddy and Bob Haldeman and John Ehrlichman and Mr. Felt there, who actually turned out to be a Deep Throat in that whole scenario. So a lot of us remember that. And the reason I did that is because I'm saying to myself, well, if this Trump trial is probably going to happen when we turn the calendar into an election year of 2024, let me give myself a refresher. Mark Felt, by the way, couldn't remember his first name. Let me give myself a refresher as to how people comported themselves when they weren't jerks, when they weren't jackasses. And I'm talking about people in both parties, occupants, current and past of the White House, members of the media. And, you know, I'm listening to this whole thing, and I couldn't help but realize that what I was listening to in those two specials, again, one was a one-hour summary from PBS, one was a summary from ABC News, with a lot of the people that you and I grew up with, Sam Donaldson, Howard K. Smith, Ted Koppel back then, all those people were telling us the story stories those nights. I couldn't help but notice similarities and differences to connected to an episode that I think we're about to relive again. And boy, I have to tell you, listening to that, and yeah, there was partisanship back then. Now, I'm not saying that didn't exist. There was partisanship, much the way there is today. There were people back then, and this needed kind of a little reinforcement here. I didn't realize back then how many staunchly pro-Nixon people there was, even as piece and piece and segments and more pieces of evidence were piling up. That, okay, if he didn't know about Watergate per se, that it was going to happen, he sure screwed up afterwards. And I'm saying to myself, oh my God, here we are rewinding this thing in my brain 51 years, and we're looking at the same thing here. Potentially, in 2024, less than a few months away. And you know, I'm wondering as I'm watching these specials and listening to them as I walk over a 1, 2, or 3 day period, and as I read the stuff on social media and hear certain voters at the Iowa fair, I'm wondering is would anybody be moved by the evidence? Because back then, there were people who said, I'm sticking with Nixon. Nothing you can show me. This is all a plot. This is all a scheme. Yeah, but so all this evidence here from all these aspects of what that is, of what this is a lie? Yeah, it sure is. But I marveled at listening to condensed portions of the days and weeks and months of testimony that was put forth and debated. Now, that testimony was not a court proceeding. I understand that. And yes, if we get this January 6th trial coming up, which I'm pretty sure we will, he's not going to. I don't think he's going to cop an agreement here, a plea deal. But I'm saying to myself, as I'm listening to this stuff over a 2 or 3 day period, I'm saying, my God, I certainly hope we have the capacity. And I'm squarely aiming this at you folks out there who are hardcore Trump people, who call me up numerous times on this radio station and say, well, what about Biden, and what about Hunter, and what about Hillary, and what about, and what about, and what about? I would certainly hope, as we saw with the Watergate situation, there are always some holdouts, and a lot of times it's because they want to get reelected, but I would certainly hope that you would go into that and say, well, prove it to me. Now, if it's not proven, to you beyond a reasonable doubt, well, okay then. That's where we are. I get that. But I was so stunned last week when I had more time during the day and I had time to listen to this stuff as to how we're, I don't want to say history is exactly repeating itself, but the amount of people that I know personally in my own life, my own friends, acquaintances, the people that call me on this station and other people who won't even entertain the thought that Donald Trump may have screwed up here big time to the point of criminality. Now, did he do that? I don't know. Again, if and we're probably going to get another indictment this week from Georgia. And I don't know whether you read this over the weekend. That's got allegations of computer hacking into it. Really? So are all these people lying? Are you really going to nominate this guy? Now, maybe you will, and maybe he'll win. And if you do and he does, then I'll sit here and get beat up by you folks for weeks on the radio, if that's what you want. But I simply don't know. Even after listening to that Watergate stuff from over 50 years ago, I cannot put into words how... I don't even know what the word would be, how stunned I am that we're going through this again, acting like somebody who you know and love and may have voted for, acting like a lot of you people out there are thinking, well, there's no way this happened. This is all a conspiracy. You don't know that. I don't care what you think, what you watched or whatever, and how you don't know that. Now, in the case of Watergate, there were some holdouts in the end, but the majority of Democrats, now the situation is different. Richard Nixon was in office, and he was promising he would never go, and he was hiding behind the will of the American people, blah, 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 I am not a crook, to stay in office. But at the end, he knew it was up, and some Republicans went over there and said, sir, you're done. And he resigned because he would have been impeached and likely convicted in the Senate. And there are people, I know some to this day, who say he was set up. He wasn't set up. Now, even if he didn't know that the burglary took place at the Watergate, he could have cut off the cover-up from moment one, and that would have been it. So we're about to see this all over again. I'm reading over the weekend where the Trump strategy is going to say, well, I was told by my lawyers, or I didn't know. Sound familiar? Now, back then, cooler heads prevailed, and it was awe-inspiring to hear the testimony again and the questioning from people back then in Congress, many of whom were diametrically opposed to each other, but they knew that this was serious. And I can only hope that if we go through this again, which is a good shot again, unless Mr. Trump cops a plea deal here, which he might, but I can only hope in a few months when this starts at the turn of the year, you will at least have some people, even if you're a Trump supporter, to take a breath, open your eyes, and at least admit that he might be wrong. 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Do you have that in you? If you are a Trump supporter, and if you hate Joe Biden, and you hate all the Democrats, are you smart enough? Do you have enough of a brain to say to yourself, well, you know what? Trump may have really screwed up here. Or are you content to vote for the guy even if he's in jail? Because we dodged this bullet once, and here we are 5 decades later, and we apparently haven't learned our lesson.